these activities as to the program. In a singing prayer drama, and much of it is being recorded. I must admit that the tapes of songs and prayers he is making now are the best ones I've ever heard. Wait till you hear them when we get back. As the Bhagavatam says, drink deep this nectar, O man of piety, and you shall be taken from this mortal frame. The women cooking for Prabhupada were serving him American desserts, apple pie, donuts, glazed cookies. Prabhupada would smile, but he only nibble at his dessert. One afternoon he said, these sweets are very nice, but no one has made these sandwiches. None of the devotees knew how to make Bengali sweets. So Prabhupada took them into the kitchen and taught them to make sandesh. Although they had watched carefully, their first attempts produced sandesh that was dry and grainy. But Prabhupada accepted it, declaring the sandesh, which Krishna himself used to eat, to the Western confections. For the devotees at Chittenburg, to have Prabhupada living among them was again to witness Krishna's pure devotee, as he engaged constantly in ecstatic devotional service with his body, mind, and word. They could see how Prabhupada was speaking and acting in Krishna consciousness at every moment, and his presence confirmed that the most exalted platform of pure devotional service was a reality. His disciples felt bliss and renewed determination, just being with him. Prabhupada's host, John and Yoko, also had the valuable opportunity to be near Prabhupada, although they chose to keep apart. Remaining together in their own world, they mingled but rarely with the devotees. Prabhupada's men continued to work under John's managers, and John was content to let the Swami and his entourage stay. When the head gardener asked John how to treat the devotees, he said, let them please themselves. On hearing of certain activities in the main house, Prabhupada commented about the bad influence women sometimes have on men. But he kept out of John and Yoko's affairs. He had his own affairs in Krishna consciousness. Throughout the Lilamrita, you'll note that it's always so satisfying to hear about Prabhupada's simple daily activities and how he would also teach the devotees how to do these simple devotional activities. Devotional service is not a very complicated thing, but to execute devotional service in this world sometimes appears to be complicated. Bhakti yoga is executed with your body, mind, and words. Therefore, it does us great injustice. It does us great harm when we minimize the value of the so-called simple things about service. What are the simple things? Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping Tulsi deity, associating with devotees, staying in a place, a holy place, that is a place for Krishna's worship. Rupa Goswami said that just a slight performance of one of these five things can awaken pure love of God. So we don't want to intellectualize ourselves out of the door of bhakti. And Prabhupada always prevented that by his personal presence, showing that with our tiny existence, we're supposed to serve Krishna with love. Whatever we do, whether we're cleaning or cooking or teaching or managing, preaching, every chance is an opportunity to offer something with love to Krishna. So just like Prabhupada did that service on behalf of Krishna when he was divinely present, we need many devotees who will demonstrate the power of devotional service, the glories of devotional service. Following in Prabhupada's footsteps, following humbly, we want to do that service for others, to show them how simply by engaging in devotional service, you will go back to Godhead. You will realize Krishna. It is not theory. It is not a belief. It is actuality. But if you want to understand Krishna in truth, you have to invest your energy with enthusiasm. Rupa Goswami also says, Tatra Loyam Mulyam Ekalam. Tatra Moyam multi-million-acre. There's only one price to go back to Babylon. That is eagerness. We all know how to be keen on something. We know how to be eager. The best place for being keen and eager is Krishna consciousness. And when those things are not there in our execution of bhakti, that's when the problems start. I gave one example about a thief who heard about Krishna in Vrindavan, how this little cowherd boy was always decorated with the most valuable jewels. So the thief thought, I must find this boy and steal his jewels. Overnight I can be a millionaire. Overnight I can be wealthy just by taking the jewels of this little innocent cowherd boy. So he went to Vrindavan very eagerly, searching for Krishna very eagerly. And finally, he actually saw Krishna due to his eagerness. And he asked, I'll give you a boy, please, give me the jewel. Give me the jewels. You're such a nice boy. Flattering him. And then Krishna told him, I said, I'll give you my jewels because my mother will be very angry. But the man kept asking, the thief kept asking, and then Krishna said, all right, you can have the jewels. By that time, the thief had become so purified by Krishna's association that all he wanted was to serve Krishna. But the point is great eagerness. And we want to give others that eagerness. Then we are good association. We have to decide for ourselves individually. Do we want to be humdrum association that makes everybody moan and groan? Or do we want to be keen, eager enthusiasm association, so that enthusiasm spreads? If you want to help your god brothers and god sisters, your fellow devotees, be enthusiastic and eager. It's not helpful when we all just come together and moan on each other's shoulders. That person is really a good devotee. Whenever I want to moan, that devotee listens. Of course, we should be sympathetic and want to help. But what is the real way to help? By showing enthusiasm and eagerness to serve Krishna. Whatever way we console someone, whatever way we want to be sympathetic and hear their trouble, it should all lead to enthusiastic engagement in devotional service. So any one of you who can demonstrate eager enthusiasm in devotional service, whether you're male, female, young devotee, old devotee, you are doing the greatest service for the devotee. And of course, Krishna says, no one's more dear to me than the one who preaches. So if you can be eager and enthusiastic about engaging others in devotional service, that is the greatest service for everyone. So Prabhupada was always showing us that you may think these are simple things, ordinary things, cooking, but no, this is the devotional service for Krishna. And it is done with complete absorption and attention. So if you want to know why sometimes temples seem to go through tough times, that happens when the enthusiasm has gone, when the keenness, the eagerness has gone, and everything becomes a drudgery. Because everyone has forgotten that we are serving Krishna, and even sweeping the floor for Krishna will take you back to Godhead. And how is the situation corrected? By preaching and by example. Some devotees just have to make up their mind that we're not going to have a situation go on like this. We're going to demonstrate how to be eager and keen in devotional service. Anyone can do that. Mothers can do it. Children can do it. Anyone. It's not very complicated. And Prabhupada is showing it. Where do the complications come from? The material energy wants you to think everything is complicated. But actually it's not. Just like Prabhupada was singing prayers, you can also recite the prayers in the Bhagavatam, the prayers by the great devotees. You can do that. I was just in the USA, and one devotee who I hadn't seen for many years reminded him of how when we were both young devotees, just 2 or 3 year devotees, one day we just went to the temple store and we got a songbook. And he just sat down. He played the drum and I played the karta, but he just sang every song in the songbook. And after that, he said, we were so happy. And I thought, wow, I haven't been there in a long time, but it's amazing. We just sat down, opened the songbook, and sang every song in the whole book straight. We prayed the redundant, I played God's self. And we were so satisfied. This is the power of bhakti. Just something like that. So we shouldn't become so sophisticated and so old in devotional service that we lose sight of the enthusiastic way to serve Krishna. And I notice these days that the time in which we become older in devotional service is arriving earlier and earlier. In that everybody, after a couple of years even, I know the ropes. I know all about devotional service. Yeah. Look out when that happens. You should always beg Krishna to be ever fresh in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, you've all heard my recommendation a few times already, that pick out a new devotee and take that new devotee's enthusiastic attitude and combine that with your maturity and experience due to being around longer. But whenever you see an enthusiastic new devotee, you take that attitude. I was telling devotees in Los Angeles during class how one new devotee, he came to Christ Church and he wanted to serve, surrender to Krishna, and so many devotees of various standings and statures in the community of devotees, loosely speaking, began to advise this young devotee to protect him. He was a new bhakta, so they were telling him, "You're fired up now, but in 2 years you're going to go through a lot of problems." You're really enthusiastic now, but let me tell you, be prepared to undergo a lot of tough experiences. Better start thinking now. What will you do when your enthusiasm wears off? This is going to wear off. So better start to plan for it now. Don't think you're always going to be happy and fired up like this. No. That's just the way you are in the beginning. But very quickly, after a couple of years, you'll see that you're going to go through a lot of phases, a lot of cycles, and better right now start thinking about what you're going to do about yourself. We all went through these phases, being enthusiastic, even when we washed pots. We all went through these phases, going out on Harinam enthusiastically. We all went through these phases, and we know. So please listen to us. Don't get too fired up. Understand that it's going to go, it's going to fade. So start planning now for that. So the devotee, Kala Sambhur was telling me, the devotee, this new devotee, he became like so, he became so distraught. What is this? He just went to the temple for and said, is it possible to serve Krishna? Can it be done? I mean, that's all I really want to do, but is it possible? But I was speaking as an example to the Americans in Los Angeles. So I said, of course, in New Zealand, we blame all these attitudes on the USA. It all comes over the ocean from the USA. Anyway, we don't want to be like that. Old maids and old men prematurely. And doing the new devotees a favor by dampening their enthusiasm. to be like that. In fact, we want to take their attitude and graft it on top of our maturity, hopefully it's there, and experience.
The Supreme is described as Aditya Varnam, Tamasa Parasat,
luminous like the sun and transcendental to the darkness of ignorance. Anandamatram ajaram pranam ekam santam bahuja drishyamanam. The Supreme is blissful, no tinge of unhappiness. Although he is the oldest, he never ages. And although he is one, he is experienced in different forms. Sarve nitya sasvatascha dehastasya paratmana. All the forms of that Supreme Person are eternal. Supreme Person has a form with hands and legs and other personal features, but his hands and legs are not material. Bhaktas know that the form of Krishna or Brahman is not at all material. Rather, Brahman has a transcendental form, and when one is fully absorbed in it, being fully developed in bhakti, one can understand him. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena. The Mayavadis, however, cannot understand this transcendental form, for they think that it is material. Om Agyana Chimanandasya Agyanjana Shalakaya Chakshunli Tamyega Tazmai Shri Gurave Namaha. It's always a great pleasure to hear about Krishna's form. Why is that? Because it is great relief for us to understand that form doesn't automatically mean misery and diminution. The forms that we are familiar with in this world of matter, they are temporary. And these forms are composed of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And that's where all the trouble comes from. They're not our real forms. But when we hear about Krishna, just like this chapter of the Brahma Vimohana Lila, the Lord interacting with Brahma, Brahma thought he stole the cows and cowherds. When we hear about Krishna's glories, how the Lord expanded himself as every missing calf and cowherd boy, and how these calves and cowherd boys are now revealing themselves as Vishnumurtis. They're not jivas. They're not living entities. They are the complete wholes. Now that that is happening, it is quite an astonishment for Lord Brahma, as well as us. Even Lord Brahma cannot fully calculate Krishna's glories. When we hear about Krishna's transcendental form, then we know that real form has no beginning and no end. Real form is not under the influence of time. The beauty of Krishna's form will relieve us from the disappointment of interacting with material forms. How are material forms disappointing? You all know that any material form ages. Any material form will eventually crumble in time. And any material form, no matter how attractive, cannot give us the satisfaction that we are looking for. If we want to be satisfied by form, we must find out Krishna's transcendental form. Krishna is so beautiful that it is said he is the ornament of the ornaments that he wears. As stated in the third canto of Bhagavatam. Krishna makes his ornaments look beautiful. So sometimes you ladies wear jewelry, yes. So you know the mentality. When you put on jewelry, it's to make you look good. Is that right though? Yeah, you do it to, you know, make yourself look better. But when Krishna puts on jewelry, he makes the jewelry look better. Therefore, Krishna, his form, is the ornament of the ornaments that he wears. How can you understand the beauty? Even when Krishna sees himself reflected in a pillar in Dwarka, he happened to look at his own form. Because, you know, the palaces in Dwarka, they're made of such extraordinary materials. And they're very polished, so much so that Krishna can see his reflection on the walls and pillars. So even Krishna became attracted to his own form. Who is this form? Who is this person? I'm becoming eager to taste the bliss of this form that I'm looking at, just like my consorts. Who is this person? How can we understand such beauty? That will be impossible as long as we strive to get pleasure out of temporary material forms. Especially at this present time in the age of Kali, people are very attached to seeing with their eyes. You want to see everything. The eyes are very addicted to being able to see objects of sense gratification. Maybe 30 or 40 years ago in Western so-called civilization, people would hear about things. But now everybody wants to see. When you open a magazine or turn on the television, you want to see it all, as they say. And sites that would be considered very degraded 30 years ago are now considered to be quite educational for the children. That is the mentality. So, we have this propensity to want to look at form, but we don't know the real form to look at. Therefore, we're cheating. We simply become preoccupied with material forms. And what is it we hope about these forms? Whenever you start interacting with a form of matter, you have hopes that although this form is temporary, I hope that I'll get some pleasure from it. And we also become proud by our possession of material forms. There is a power in material objects which makes them attractive even though they are temporary. That is the power of Maya. With our tiny intelligence, we cannot understand Krishna. You're hearing that in this verse. But the fact is, with our tiny intelligence, we cannot even understand Krishna's inferior potency. That is what the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita. Daiviesha gunamai mama maya adratya. This material energy of mine, you cannot surpass it unless you surrender to me. In other words, what to speak of Krishna, even Krishna's inferior potency is beyond our comprehension. What does the Lord say in the beginning of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Urvamulam adrat shaka. There's a banyan tree with its roots upwards and its branches downwards. Ashvatam prarabhya. This banyan tree is inexhaustible. And what do we do on this banyan tree of material existence? We wander from one branch to another. And we never get to the end. You can just think of that in your mind. Think of all material activities, all the people executing material activities, and see how they're just going from one branch to another on the banyan tree of material existence, and they never get to the end. Have you ever climbed into a tree and never got to the end of the tree? That is material life. Nanto nachadhyaya nacha sampratishtha. You can't understand the beginning of the tree, you can't understand where the tree ends, and you can't understand the foundation of the tree. This is Krishna describing his own Maya, his inferior potency. He's not talking about his transcendental form, he's talking about the illusory energy. You can't understand the beginning, the end, or the foundation. Yet, with our tiny intelligence, we want to speculate about Krishna's form. We have to have a humble attitude about material existence. Even material existence is beyond the researching capacity of the greatest scholars. What to speak of Krishna? This is how great Krishna is. His inferior potency, his shadow potency. Chaiva yasya bhuvanani bhavarti durga. Indi brahma sahita Lord Brahma says that this illusory force is Krishna's shadow potency. It gives the semblance of the real thing, but it's not. Even the shadow is beyond our understanding. And what is the proof? Even though we know that we cannot be satisfied by the material energy, still we cling to sense gratification. That is the proof that the material energy is beyond us. Who can understand this? Even when we know that we will suffer from sinful activity, we still engage in sinful activity. Now, how do you explain that? What is the rationality behind that? That is why we watch our association. Association doesn't simply mean with other people. Association means with the modes of material nature. Which mode of nature are we associating with? That's why Arjuna asked Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, why is it that people commit sinful activity even against their own will? And Krishna explains, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Raja Guna Samudrava. It is lust only, and where does that lust come from? Contact with the material energy, with the modes of material nature, particularly passion. So we may think we understand, but because we're associating with the modes of nature, never mind, we still surrender to Maya. Although we think we have learned our lesson, we think we've understood. Just try this sometimes when you're talking to an audience of non-devotees. Ask them how many times in their life they've gotten into situations they didn't plan. I tried this at Rathyatra in Los Angeles, but I was in the question and answer group. And so people are quite proud these days, many of them. They read all these self-help books and positive thinking books. Each person many times thinks he or she's really got it together, and you know, that life is going to go the way they want. They study the seven habits, got it all down, everything's going to be efficient. So I asked them, how many of you, has anything ever happened in your life that you didn't plan for? Yeah. Especially a lot of girls at times. Happens all the time in the material world. You think you got it all figured out, and you're caught in situations which you never expected. Due to the power of the modes of nature. But materialists can't understand it. But I don't know how I got into that situation. Anyway, it won't happen again. I've learned my lesson. No, if you've actually learned your lesson, then you won't associate with the modes of material nature. But because you indeed have not learned your lesson, therefore you go on associating with Maya, thinking that you'll avoid distressful situations. Impossible. So many times we can look back and see, even those of us who are trying to be devotees, you can look back and see your non-devotional life before you seriously took up Krishna consciousness. How, without planning, how against your will, you became involved in so many embarrassing situations. You just became caught up. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Karanam Guna Sangrishya Sarasa Yoni Janmasu. Due to association with the modes, you're just wandering in this way and that way, enjoying and suffering. You're being swept away by something, but you think that you are in control. Ankara Vamudatma Kataham Nityumanyate. So it's very humbling to actually understand what's going on in material existence. We cannot understand the extent of Maya. Nanto Nichadya Natya Sampratishta. We can't understand the beginning of Maya. We can't understand the end. We don't understand what's underneath Maya. We're wandering on this inexhaustible banyan tree of material existence. Once we begin to understand these things, we become humble enough to be able to understand Krishna. How do you understand Krishna? By academic research, by scholarship? No. As stated here, mere Shastra-gyan, or knowledge in the Vedas, does not help anyone understand the personality of Godhead. Only one who is favored or shown mercy by the Lord can understand Him. Later it says, He is attained only by one whom He Himself chooses. Now how do we qualify ourselves to be be chosen by Krishna. Plain and simple devotional service. Krishna's watching. How are we using our life? How are we utilizing our energies? Krishna wants to see that. If we can learn the art, science, culture, and philosophy of how to act so Krishna is pleased, then we will see Krishna. Do we all have that desire to see Krishna? We have to have some desire. If we have no desire to see Krishna's form, that doesn't mean we don't desire to see any form. No. Without a desire to see Krishna's form, we simply dedicate our life to material forms, trying to squeeze pleasure out of temporary material forms. Oh, this looks like a nice form here. This material form here will give me appreciation. This material form here will make me feel good that it's mine. You belong to me. Your form of matter belongs to me. And we hope that by associating with that material form, just like sometimes you see cats rubbing up against the wall. You ever seen that? So we also think by associating with a material form that some happiness will enter my life, some fulfillment. That is the main illusion of material existence. One form links up with another form, and they think by our combination we will attract all happiness and we'll be able to fight off any distress by our combination. So the two forms meet, they tell each other, you are my life and soul. And Maya is so powerful, it does seem like that. Yes, this magic moment. You wouldn't want to be anywhere else but now. This is the place, this is the person, this is the way to go. The material engine starts pounding in your ears. Yes! Here it is. You wouldn't want it any other way. You've got that moment right now. And your life feels so complete, and your life feels so enriched. But then what happens? Everybody knows what happens. They know what happens, what will happen, but they cannot restrain themselves. Although at one moment, it may seem so powerful and dynamic, this coming together of this form and that form. Very shortly, after just a little bit of time, that same coming together is hackneyed, dry, frustrating. And in fact, a lot of people, they don't even get the illusion of being happy the first time they associate in their romantic or lusty affairs. Gross or subtle. And those that do, they know it only lasts a short time. One day it's, you are my life and soul. A few days later, they want a divorce. It can happen even in our devotee association. When devotees think that their main happiness in life should come from their partner, then there are complete problems. But if they understand that they are associating with one another in Krishna consciousness as grihasthas, for the purpose of helping one another in spiritual advancement, and that their main juice, their main nectar, is coming from the processes of devotional service, then they can last. But as soon as they start thinking that you are actually meant to satisfy me, big problems. But as soon as you think we are meant to satisfy Krishna, then things can proceed. So it's quite interesting to analyze things in terms of form. How our material life is preoccupation with form, and how spiritual life is also preoccupation with form. But what is the difference between Krishna's form and our forms? That we are learning in this chapter. Krishna's form is so complete that he can manifest in other forms And each one of those forms is perfect and complete. The more we think about these things, the more we'll be protected from taking Krishna consciousness in a mechanical, ritualistic way. We want to develop attraction for Krishna's form. That is the natural result of developing an attraction for the holy name, Atat Sri Krishna Namadi. First, cultivate the name, and then Adi. After the holy name, Atat Sri Krishna Namadi. After that, first things first, qualities, forms, pastimes become revealed to you. We have to have some objectives in our spiritual life that we're willing to sacrifice for. How many of you have some objectives in devotional service that you're willing to sacrifice for? That you're willing to even renounce precious sense gratification for? How many of you have that? If you don't, how do you expect to advance in Krishna consciousness? You have to have a yearning, an eagerness. That because I want to understand Krishna, because I want to see Krishna, therefore I won't do this and I won't do that. Because I want to distribute Krishna consciousness. I want to teach Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I won't do this, I won't do that. In Vedic culture, in real civilized society, even to bring a child into the world, there is great austerity performed. So unless we have something that we are going to sacrifice for, because we want to please Krishna, how will we stay out of this inconceivable illusory energy? Krishna has already told you, you can't stay out of Maya on your own. You can't understand Maya on your own. The more we become convinced of the transcendental nature of Krishna's body, the more we become eager to render service to that body. That's why the Lord is known as Hrishikesh, the master of the senses. Our senses are meant to serve Krishna's senses. And we know what misery means. Misery means with our senses we want to please ourselves. It looks attractive. It looks possible, but it is not. So devotional service is based on these simple things. What are you going to do with your senses? What forms are you involved with? Do you know the difference between Krishna's form and the temporary forms of matter? Do you want to go on being trapped in bodies of matter, trying to derive satisfaction by interacting with other bodies of matter? Is that your goal? If not, what are you going to do about it? Any questions?
When you mentioned that so many people nowadays are into self-help and empowerment and all that kind of thing.
You get what you're supposed to get. Even if you don't endeavor, you're going to get the happiness you're supposed to get and the distress you're supposed to get. It's packed into the body at the time of birth. That's why Narada Muni advises Kasyaiva Hesha Priyatesha Kovrida. If you're a puppy, you're actually a learning person. You don't endeavor for anything that's available within this universe, from the highest planet down to the lowest. Because you know, anything like that can be had by the influence of time. time administers your karma, it's packed into your body, you're going to get what you're supposed to get. The Hawaiian debtor. Now that doesn't mean to just lay around and do nothing, because the modes of material nature will force you to do something. But the fact is, even if you don't endeavor, you'll get the material things you're supposed to get in terms of happiness and distress. It'll come to you automatically by the influence of time. Therefore, why not use your powers of endeavor to try to get Krishna? Otherwise, due to your past activities in your past life, whatever material happiness is supposed to come to you, it'll come to you. Whatever distress, it'll come to you. It's already predetermined. Therefore, some people read these self-help books and they get nothing. Other people read them and they get a lot. It seems like they become wealthy, it really helps them. But actually, it's just that karma. You get what you're supposed to get, whether you read the books or not.
This seems a little strange. I mean, I look at a lot of people that have some people in the life, and it seems like they, when they choose to apply these theories, then they have a result.
Well, you said it. It seems like the nature of Maya. It seems that way. Isn't that the story of our lives in material existence? It always looks a certain way. It seems this way. But it's not. That's what I call Maya. That which seems, but is not. Therefore, you cannot understand Maya with your material intelligence. Because it always seems that way.
So in that way,
of course, you are the doer. The fool thinks like that. Vimudha. Mudha means fool. Vimudha means especially foolish. That's the way mental energy works. You are the doer. You feel that way. And you read self-help books, yes. I am the doer. These will help me. You don't get one bit more than you're supposed to get. Do your karma. Not one bit more, not one bit less. Of course, for a devotee, that is something else. Therefore, the only sane endeavor is devotional service. That's not predetermined. So if you want to learn how to serve Krishna better, in the process of doing that, you take advantage of some material knowledge. That's something else. Otherwise, within the purview of the material energy, it is foolish to endeavor. You are firmly bound up by your past. You cannot get any more wealth in this life than you are destined to. And you will not stop the distress that you're destined to get. Therefore, what about the next life? That's why Prabhupada was preaching that way. Why don't you concern yourself with your next life? What's going to happen then? This life determines for the material. Predetermined. Next life, what are you going to do? What you do now determines your next life. Therefore, we were talking about forms. Which forms are you going to interact with in this life and the next? Is it fun playing with forms of matter? Is it rewarding? Is it enlightening? You are the form for me. You're a form. If it would kindly shower blessings upon me, I would feel so. When I'm around your form, I feel peaceful and I feel different. I feel like everything's going to be all right. When I'm around your form of matter, I feel secure. what's actually going on. What's that form of matter actually doing? It's decomposing right in front of your eyes. You can actually see it. That's the only thing. That's the only thing. A good form. A form I can depend on. Then all my anxieties will go away. That's why Krishna jokingly told that to Kuja. He invited him over to her house. And he said, yes, certainly. When you have a girlfriend like you, then all anxieties will go away. You are a suitable girlfriend to dispel all anxieties. That's the way we think in material existence. Your form will dispel all my anxieties. Krishna was joking, but we take it very seriously. Where's that form that's going to help me out? Oh, it's not the form, it's actually the spirit soul, but how does the form look? This is the story of material existence. Therefore, Prabhupada recommended it, especially for householders, deity worship. Then you become preoccupied with the real form. And you start putting an impossible burden upon your husband or wife. You must be the form that satisfies me. When you're serving the arts of Vigraha, then you can put all those aspirations on Krishna. Please let me serve you. Please show me what you must satisfy me. Then Krishna can handle all that. Husband or wife can't. Of course, if the husband and wife are all together serving Krishna, then that is proper. But if they're looking to each other, you must satisfy me. What do you think I married you for? Then there are problems. And marriages break up in Krishna consciousness. It happens, as we all know, because of unreasonable demands put on the other partner. But when you're, as you say, forcing your mind to think of Krishna, why are you doing that? Why? But why are you forcing you to think of Krishna? Why are you doing the recommended thing? And what is that profession? Stop talking like an impersonal. Yes, you're trying to please Krishna. So even in our beginning stages, when we force the mind to think about Krishna, that is devotion to Krishna. Once Prabhupada commented that everyone's looking for peace. The yogis looking for peace, the yanis are looking for peace. So only my devotees are peaceful. Why? Because they're always thinking of how to spread Krishna consciousness. So in your efforts to control your senses, because you're devotee, that is devotion. I must control my senses, otherwise I won't be able to serve Krishna nicely. If I give in to my senses, it will spoil my attempts to please Krishna. That's devotion. It's totally different from the dry yogis and jnanis trying to control their senses, and they know nothing about engaging in devotional service. When we, as devotees, try to control our senses, that's done out of devotion. If I don't control my mind and senses, I won't be able to do the proper service to my Lord. That's devotion. That's why Prabhupada said that every devotee should always have some kind of responsibility if he or she can do it. So that you think In order to execute this great duty, I must follow the regular principles. Otherwise, I'll never be able to pull this off. That was one thing Prabhupada recommended, how to engage devotees in devotional service. Just like the book distributors, they know. If we engage in Maya, we know what will happen when we get out on the street or door to door with our books. We'll have no potency. We know that. So in order to protect the jewel that most of the time is given them, they control their mind and senses. That's the way Krishna consciousness is designed. You want to please Krishna, and in order to please Krishna, you voluntarily take up sacrifice. That is devotion. Therefore, it is very tragic if our devotees don't have something in mind how they want to please Krishna. Because then they won't agree to control their senses. So motivation, the proper motivation means to inspire devotees. What do you want to do to please Krishna? How are you going to go for it? What do you want to go for? And then, in their efforts to achieve that goal, they will control their senses. Anything else?
When you mentioned how we shouldn't like to shelter the food for the children, how do we become more aware or conscious of shelter and protection? Is it just a progressive thing?
Yes, it's definitely progressive. You have to be aware. You have to educate yourself. How you depend on matter and refuse to depend on Krishna. You must educate yourself in that way. Through practical experience and study, attentive chanting, these understandings will come. They're the gifts of Krishna for those who try to serve Him. Learn one book at least. Learn Bhagavad Gita. That's enough perfection. Chant the holy name, learn Bhagavad Gita, serve Krishna. You'll get these realizations about depending on matter and depending on Krishna. One last question. Then you ask me. You need a reminder. That's what they say, actually. All right. Nice seeing everybody again. I just all those forever. So we're working with that vision. That's Prabhupada's system.